From the NBC newsroom in New York, this is John McVane with your World News Roundup. This morning, we expect to hear from Moscow, where the Big Four have all presented plans for the future organization of Germany. We also expect to hear from England, still struggling with floodwaters. The big news of the day is the plans for putting into effect President Truman's loyalty checkup on all federal workers. Washington will tell us all about it. Now your announcer, then I'll be back with your complete World News Roundup.
Today marks the final week of the current American Red Cross campaign to raise more than $60 million. All over the world where American soldiers are serving, you'll find American Red Cross workers and American Red Cross canteens and recreation rooms. You'll find the Red Cross, too, wherever sudden disaster or epidemic has struck, aiding victims with food, medical supplies, and shelter. Red Cross volunteers give courses in home nursing, as well as training in first aid and water safety. In your schools, the Red Cross sponsors education for better diet and eating habits for a healthier generation of young Americans. It is to you, the American public, that the Red Cross turns for support in the form of dollars for the 1947 Red Cross Fund. We urge you to give to the Red Cross now. Now back to the NBC newsroom and your World News Roundup.
Congressmen who've been complaining periodically that communists still hold government jobs will soon learn whether their charges are true. But Congress will have to appropriate an estimated $25 million to obtain that knowledge. President Truman has ordered a thorough investigation of the loyalty of the more than 2 million people who have government posts. The FBI will check up on them and on future applicants for federal employment as well. Mr. Truman's statement, announcing the unprecedented survey, stated that the presence in the government of any disloyal or subversive person constitutes a threat to our democratic processes. A government employee under the new order may be discharged if he's a member of or is even in sympathetic association with communist, fascist, totalitarian, or subversive groups. Washington reports indicate that communists and communist sympathizers will be the first objective of the order. The president's move was made only a few days after the Supreme Court refused to interfere in the discharge of a federal employee on the ground that he was a member of what the Attorney General called a communist front organization. In issuing the order, Mr. Truman has probably taken the sting out of charges by Republican opponents that the administration was lax in allowing communists to hold government posts. But we'll hear the full story of the president's order in a few minutes directly from Washington. Over in Moscow, the Big Four foreign ministers have been getting down to hard discussion of exactly how they want Germany organized. The four countries have submitted their overall plans. There doesn't seem so much difference between them as might have been expected. But for a first-hand report, let's hear now from Henry Cassidy in Moscow.
Four delegations at the Council of Foreign Ministers are circulating papers today containing their specific proposals for settlement of the German problems, which have been discussed in general terms for the last 2 weeks. Under the procedure suggested by Secretary of State Marshall and adopted yesterday, the ministers will study the various plans today and tomorrow. A committee of experts will draw up a report on points of agreement and disagreement, and the council will meet again Tuesday to decide what to do next. One of the first papers to come out, which has been labeled secret until now, is the United States plan for political organization of Germany. It spells out Secretary Marshall's previous declaration that a provisional German government should be established, followed by preparation of a constitution and creation of a permanent democratic regime. Apart from the work of the conference, which has now fallen into a routine pattern, two other questions are intriguing the delegates. One is the subject of secret agreements made by the Big Three in their meetings at Tehran, Yalta, and Potsdam. Last week, the Russians published the secret protocol of Yalta, which showed that the Allies agreed to discuss reparations on a basis of taking $20 billion from Germany, half of it to go to Russia, and some to be taken from current German production. The publication was slightly embarrassing to the Western powers. I understand that there was another secret protocol of Tehran, which has not yet been published, which would be slightly embarrassing to the Russians. This one provided for some form of dismemberment of Germany, although the Russians now propose an all-German constitution. The other intriguing question is, when is Secretary of State Marshall going to the Kremlin? So far, only French Foreign Minister Bidault has made the trip, and a suspicion is growing in some diplomatic quarters that Secretary Marshall is getting a brush off. This is Henry Cassidy in Moscow.
Britain is still battling with rising floods. Last night, more than 3,000 families trapped by floods in their houses in North Lincolnshire, England, were rescued. For more news of this and other British developments, we take you now to Merrill Muller in London.
Britain's flood situation continued to spread today. Another of its great cities is completely isolated, and three more large towns were flooded out during the night, as well as additional thousands of acres of farmlands. The critical area remains the Fens district, where there is now no hope of closing the gaps in the banks of the Ouse River. In the balance of the country, the situation is described as hopeful, with most rivers dropping slightly as the weather improves. The city of York found itself surrounded by floodwaters this morning, though its streets are still dry. Not so lucky were the towns of Newcastle, Durham, and Crowland, which awoke today to find the floods in nearby areas had swelled overnight and were now coursing through the built-up areas. Thousands more families were moved to upper stories in their homes, while additional hundreds of farmers had to be evacuated after destroying their livestock. The best insurance damage experts today believe this flood havoc will cost Britain nearly $1 billion before it is over. Meanwhile, the alleged scandal raised in the House of Commons over the British Broadcasting Corporation ended today in a whisper when Sir Valentine Holmes, KC, produced the report of his investigations. Said the Holmes report, "There is no solid foundation for any charge of bribery, corruption, or partiality against members of the BBC staff." The report added, however, that three persons had been unwise in certain acts, particularly as regards song plugging. The BBC Board of Governors immediately followed the Holmes report with a statement of acceptance in which they explained that one of the three persons named had been reprimanded and then cleared of charges, while the other two cases were still being examined. Sir Valentine's proposals regarding song plugging will go before a special committee of the BBC for adoption of a practical scheme that has escaped the BBC for some 12 years. The nation, therefore, will receive these reports tonight and tomorrow with great relief in the confirmation of the integrity of its tax-financed state radio. This is Merrill Muller in London.
The big question in Washington is what will happen now as a result of President Truman's order for a loyalty checkup on all federal workers. For news of this, we take you now to Bjorn Bjornsson in Washington.
Here's the background on President Truman's loyalty order. The president acted on the basis of a 40-page report from a temporary commission on employee loyalty. This commission was named last November at the suggestion of the House Civil Service Committee. It was composed of one representative each from five cabinet departments and the Civil Service Commission. The report was submitted a month ago, but was withheld pending the executive order. Mr. Truman's executive order calls for a loyalty check on all of the present 2.25 million government employees, as well as all future employees. In brief, here's what it provides. The Attorney General is to list all groups that are totalitarian, fascist, communist, or subversive, that seek to deny citizens their constitutional rights, or that seek to change the form of government by unconstitutional means. Membership, or even sympathetic association with such a group, will stamp an employee as disloyal. A central master index is to be kept of all persons on whom loyalty checks have been made, so that all hiring agencies may refer to it. Every department and agency is to appoint a loyalty board to hear charges against employees and recommend whether they should be fired. The Civil Service Commission is to set up a loyalty review board that will act as a court of final appeal. The names of persons giving information against employees may be kept secret in certain cases, but sufficient identification must be given to permit the value of their testimony to be weighed. The executive order is effective immediately. In some instances, of course, action will have to await congressional appropriation of funds. Both the Civil Service Commission and the FBI will have to increase their personnel. Only about 100 Civil Service Commission employees are on investigative work now, says a commission spokesman. Supplemental appropriations of $15 or $20 million may be asked for the commission and the FBI. The executive order can conceivably be misused, but, says a White House official, it will not be a witch hunt. I can't imagine that any great number of firings will result. This is Bjorn Bjornsson in Washington.
The chief labor news in the country today was good news. A nationwide strike of 110,000 employees of the rubber companies that produce 90% of the nation's tires had been scheduled for midnight tonight. Early this morning, the strike was called off when the employers agreed to give the union men an 11.5 cent an hour wage increase. The increase was a compromise. The union wanted 16 cents, and a week ago, the companies offered 10. Out at Lake Success, United Nations delegates are still wondering how to express diplomatically the alarm that some have felt at President Truman's Greco-Turkish program because it seemed to indicate lessening American support of the UN organization. Some delegates are reported to have asked American Representative Warren Austin, informally, to try to obtain at least a Washington statement on the policy for the United Nations. Palestine also has become a delicate diplomatic subject at Lake Success. The United States is reported to have asked Britain to make one more try at settling the matter directly before taking it to the UN. But the British think they've done everything possible, so sooner or later, most UN sources feel, the United States, Russia, and the other UN members will have to take over the responsibility. A Chinese newspaper today reports that Russian forces have occupied an island owned by China in Korea Bay, 82 miles east of Dairen. There's no guarantee of reliability in the report, but it says a Russian warship landed supplies and a small detachment on Haiyang Island and set up a radio station. The dispatch says the occupying troops claimed Russian sovereignty over the island, dated back before the Russo-Japanese War of 1905. And the rightist Greek government today declared martial law in the southern tip of Greece. This time, the move wasn't aimed against leftists, but it was aimed at rightists. Rightist bands in the southern Peloponnesus killed at least 13 leftist sympathizers in a raid on a small village. The government announced it would take action against all civil and military leaders of the district found connected with the violence. The leftist EAM group reported the incident to the big four ministers in Moscow, and the Greek government action speedily followed. American consular officials today are investigating the wreck of an American army plane in Ethiopia. Two United States diplomats are reported to have been among the six killed in the crash. They were Don I. Sullivan, an attaché of the Cairo embassy, and Daniel C. Bennett, Jr. of the Beirut delegation. And from Spain today comes another report that dictator Franco is getting ready to step down. This time it said he'll yield to a Spanish monarchy. More news in a moment. In the meantime, here is your announcer.
The day has come when more Americans can afford skilled hospital and medical care than ever before. For the widespread use of hospitalization plans, the expansion of public health services and the Veterans Administration, as well as the provisions of the GI Bill of Rights, have done much to make this possible. But it so happens that thousands of these Americans entitled to medical care can't get it because there are not enough trained nurses available to keep hospitals, clinics, and other facilities going at full capacity. You young ladies listening in can help ease this situation and assure yourself of a lifetime career with interesting work at good pay if you'll take advantage of the 3-year student nursing course now being offered at more than 1,300 accredited schools of nursing throughout the nation. If you're between the ages of 18 and 35, a high school graduate, or a college student in good standing, you may be eligible to enroll for this 3-year student nursing course. Get in touch with your local hospital or your nearest school of nursing for full details. And now, back to the newsroom.
Dispatches from Brazil today say that Colonel Rafael Franco, exiled former president of Paraguay, has secretly joined the Paraguayan insurgent forces. He's helping form a provisional revolutionary government. David Nasser, Brazilian newspaper man, said the government is being formed to represent all parties, and elections for a permanent government will be held as soon as the regime of President Higinio Morinigo is overthrown. Nasser interviewed Cesare Aguirre, leader of the original uprising, and Aguirre denied that the revolt was communist-inspired. He said there were not more than 800 communists in all Paraguay. He said that he attributed the uprising to President Morinigo's efforts to prevent legal elections in Paraguay. And Nasser reported the revolutionists are moving slowly toward the south. And that's the complete World News Roundup. John McVane saying goodbye from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.